to another episode of the Blue Toon Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. This week we'll be looking back on Saturday's narrow defeat to Cove Rangers, preview the trip to Far Hill for a game against league leaders Queen's Park, and we'll hear from manager Jim McAnally and new signing Flynn Duffy. I'm Colin Byers, and with me as always is Martin Smith. Martin, welcome along once again. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Colin. Yourself?
I'm not too bad. Just flying through life, as you say. Just getting by another week as we get closer to the C word, I think you said a few weeks ago, which we're going to touch on at the moment.
But no, it's a wee bit too soon for that.
It's a bit too soon for that. Have we gotten over the disappointment of Saturday yet then?
Just about. I'm sure we'll come on to like a few contentious things throughout the game, but yeah, it's a tough one to take on Saturday.
It was really really bad, a really tough one to take, as you said. But because we didn't touch on it a lot, or wasn't here last week, we'll touch briefly on the win against Clyde, just because it was a win against Clyde, we should really mention it. First 20 minutes was really good, three goals, which was exactly what we needed at the right time as well, and I think we said a couple of weeks ago it was probably the right game for us to have at that time as well.
Yeah, as you said, we felt it was the right game to sort of go into, and as you said, the first 20 minutes I thought we looked really good. It was almost like a switch was flicked after 20 minutes. We seemed to, it was almost like we worried a wee bit too much of conceding goals. Maybe the results and performances of previous games maybe played in the players' minds. But no, the first 20 minutes was really good. We allowed Clyde back into it through a dodgy decision with the penalty. But then from then on, I thought we looked okay. Nothing glamorous, nothing too disappointing, but it was a narrow win, which I felt could have been more comfortable in the end than what it actually was.
Yeah, I think once you go 3-1 up, you're kind of almost nailing cruise control, but I think because it was so early as well, there was always that element that Clyde could get back into it and right enough they did. But to their credit, second half, they defended well. They did exactly what they needed. They kept David Goodwillie quiet. Yes, he did score two goals, but one of them was a penalty, one was a rebound. But other than that, he had a pretty quiet game. And it was good to see three different goal scorers as well, rather than just relying on that one person to score goals again.
Yeah, as you touched on there, they did well in the second half. And credit where credit is due, because we've been on a couple of episodes now and we've criticised the goals that we're shipping. I think it would have been quite easy at 3-2 to defend quite deep and be worried about if it was going to happen. So credit to them that they stuck to their guns and that we got the 3 points. And as you touched on, different goal scorers. We've mentioned before as well that you kind of rely on just Nia Payne and Scott Brown and Russell McLean to get the goal. So it was good to see different goal scorers throughout as well. And obviously Andy McCarthy getting his first goal as well. A notable touch as well. Unusual as well, but he could have had the header just before as well. It was a really good save.
Yeah, good save.
As you said, it was good. First 20 minutes was really good. The rest of the game was a wee bit dodgy, but thankfully we got the 3 points against Clyde.
And that was all was really we were looking for, was the 3 points.
Yeah.
Performance just now maybe is now the priority is getting the 3 points. So that kind of leads us on to the Saturday's game against the Cove Derby game, a big game. First of all, we'll like to thank Jordan Brown for stepping in on commentary with us at short notice, very short notice, in fact. So thanks to him, and I think he ended up enjoying it. And we're seeing a pattern that they all kind of go, oh, an issue, but once they settle into it, the first 5-10 minutes, they get into it and they relax, and then they just kind of, it's just basically just speaking about football.
Yeah, and that's what we've hoped would happen, that the first 5 minutes are a wee bit wary. But then once they see the set-up and it's quite informal, it's just discussing the game and how they see it. And I think it's good to get even a player's point of view, but a current player as well. Mm-hmm. He came to what Jim's saying in the training, he came to what they're saying in the dugout and in the dressing room, so it was good to get his input, and I think he enjoyed it.
He certainly told us he enjoyed it. So
whether he comes back
whether again. Thanks to Jordan for that. So Saturday's game then against Cove, it ended up being quite a feisty affair, as we thought it might have been. But the actual game itself hinged on two or three different decisions, which we will come to. First of all, talk about your setup. It looked as though he reverted to like a 4-2-3-1 with new signing Flynn Duffy almost sitting next to Simon Ferry, just to kind of give them that extra protection, because it's not very often we'll come up against teams that will play two up front, but Cove traditionally will play two up front with Meganson and McAllister. So I think he was just giving them back for that little bit of extra protection.
Yeah, and as you mentioned there, Flynn Duffy, I thought he had a really good game. What was quite noticeable is he's a defensive sort of player in terms of Ryan Conroy. Any time he went forward, there was someone filling in that space. I think we've been caught out numerous times in the last 16, 18 month of the game. And that's no disrespect to Ryan. He's not naturally a left-back, but it is probably an area of the park that teams pick out has been Peter Head's weak point, doing that left side. And any time he did go forward, Flynn sort of slotted in. And with the protection there of Flynn Duffy and Simon Ferry, I thought we had a good balance of the team. Mm-hmm. I think maybe last couple of weeks it's maybe been slightly off in terms of the balance. But no, I think Jim got it right. I think the tactics of the 4-2-3-1 worked. And it was just unfortunate we didn't get a result for it.
Yeah, I think it was quite a brave decision to leave Jason Brown out and just put him on the bench, because it was quite easy for him to slot back into the side, even if he wanted to play him at right back. But he went with McCarthy again at right back, Mulligan and McDonald in the middle. So I think that was quite a brave, big decision for him to make that. But again, he went McCarthy down the right, which I think he gives you that something different.
Yeah,
he's a bit more attacking as opposed to maybe saying having like a Mulligan or even a Jason Brown at right back.
Aye, as you said, I think McCarthy gives you that width. We've seen it time and time again that McCarthy likes to go beyond, whether it be Hamish Ritchie on the right side or whether it's Lyle Calm, whoever's playing there, he'll go beyond. And I think that's something that you maybe wouldn't get from Mace players that play at right back. It was a big call to leave Jason Brown out. I think it was the right decision. I don't think Mulligan or McDonald did anything really wrong against Clyde the week before. I can't good will he scored two, as you said. One was a penalty and one was a rebound. But overall, I don't think they did too bad. And it just shows you that I think there is quality in the squad. I can't folk will maybe look at the table and look at results and you know, question that. But I think there is quality. And the fact that you can leave a player like Jason Brown on the bench, I think speaks volumes of it as well.
Yeah, and again, as I've said before as well, that there's a lot of there's a lot of guys that can play in two or three different positions as well, and not just as we've said before, round pegs and square holes. It's actually playing them in a position where they're comfortable. And we're looking at Mulligan; he can play two or three different positions and play quite well. The good thing about Mulligan is that he likes to take the ball out of the back as well. He likes to go forward with it at his feet. But onto the game then. First half, it was pretty much. It was end to end, but without really the goalkeepers having too much to do. I think it was there was a lot of half chances for both sides. I think maybe Cove maybe edged it slightly in terms of the better chances, but all in all, first half it was pretty quiet.
I thought it was a game first half flatter to deceive, as you said. There was a lot of good efforts, but I don't think there was any shots on target in the first half, if I remember correctly, the stats. I think it was the second half before there was anything. As you said, I think Cove did hit the better of the chances. There was the ball across, was it Megson and McAllister?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they'd gotten the timing right there, I think Rory McAllister, again, he'd had a shot just outside the box. But nothing really troubled the keeper, even from a Peter Head point of view. There was nothing really you'd think, well, the keeper was struggling to get to it. As I said, flatter to deceive, a lot of good chances or half chances, but nothing really to trouble either goalkeeper.
The only time that Brett was in a bit of trouble was when he caused it himself, came for a ball and then just let it go by for some unknown reason, but he had it under control, we think. But then a few minutes later there was another long ball, and this time he actually stayed on his line rather than coming for it and dealing with it. So we're laughing. It's funny because there wasn't a goal conceded, but it's little things like that. It's been in the games this season where one lapse of concentration. I think Jordan said it on commentary as well, that that's the kind of things that they need to cut out.
Yeah, communication. We've spoken about that before, but I think the second one when he stayed. He's looking at the game, he's looking up the park, and Mulligan, I think, was a defender roundabout. Now he's going backwards. To me, Brett Long's got to take command of that situation. He can see the distance that the ball's travelled. He can see if it's in front of him, rather than Josh trying to turn, look where a striker is, look where the goalkeeper is and try and deal with it. Brett Long should just command it and say, look, this is my ball, or you need to deal with it, and give a loud, clear command. Because I know there's fans back in the stadium, but you know, Balmer at times can be a quieter place, and I didn't hear much of that for the goalkeeper. even going back to Josh Wright, Lenny Wilson, and now Brett Long, I would like to hear a really strong commanding goalkeeper. I'm sure that'll come in time as he gets used to playing with the back four and a couple of changes, but I really would like the goalkeeper to be real commanding and say, no, this is what we're doing.
One other instance in the first half I want to pick out as well. I think, again, it was McAllister that created it. He got a bit of space down the right and he crossed it to Jamie Masson, who looked as though he was going to fire it into the net, but all of a sudden Simon Ferry came out with a nowhere and blocked a shot. How good was Simon, particularly that first half, and doing things like that?
Well, I think we've said that before. I think at times Simon Ferry's underrated because he's not got to be a box-to-box player. He's not got to cover massive areas apart, but he's got a brilliant footballing brain. He can spot danger that some players don't even notice until it's actually, you know, with the players past you or the ball's in the back of the net. And some of the things, I think Flynn Duffy and him paired well in midfield. They offer different things, and Simon Ferry's got a brilliant footballing brain, and sometimes he just drops deeper, or he starts coming back before the attack's even started, and he can read the game. So, very underrated, but a really good performance from him.
Yeah, it was the last game against, I think it was Clyde, where he almost sort of slipped into a sweeper and a back three kind of role as well. So whether or not that's something that they've been looking at and working on in training as well. But as you said, it's a part of a game that it's a dirty side.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get the recognition that it deserves, because it's not the goal scorer and it's not the 20-yard, 30-yard bursting forward and beating five or six men. But it's a necessary part of the game.
I generally think if you don't have Simon Ferry playing, then it doesn't allow players like Scott Brown and Hamish Ritchie to go further forward. I think if Simon's not playing, you will see a more reserved performance for Scott Brown, and that's not really part of his game either. Mm-hmm. So I think they all complement each other, but I certainly think if you take Simon Ferry out, because I think he is underrated and maybe doesn't get the recognition, as you said, for various reasons, but his performance on Saturday was really good in the first half.
And plus as well, the way that generally we were set up is a 4-4-2 diamond that allows the fullbacks to go forward. It just means that he's then covering, like if Conroy goes forward or if it's McCarthy on the right or if it's Strachan or whoever it is, he's in there and he covers. And again, it's an ugly job, it's a necessary job.
Yeah, a lot of things as well I've noticed in the last couple of games, that especially in throw-ins that we're attacking, he is making sure that there is people in the right areas defensively, because it's pretty easy to throw into it. If you lose possession, you get countered on pretty quick. But he's making sure that players like some McDonald and Mulligan, they're in the right area to receive the ball, but not only if they didn't receive it, that they're there to react quick if we've lost the ball. So again, a lot of things that maybe goes unnoticed to a lot of guys, but no, without Simon, we're a poorer team for it.
One of the runs that we were hoping that Scott Brown was going to get from midfield, he actually created a chance for Nia Payne when he sort of 20, 30 yards across the goal and picked out Nia, but his left footed shot went wide. Probably the only real sort of effort we had in the first half.
Yeah, as I said, it was a game with very few chances in the first half. Cove probably shaded it, but that was probably our best opportunity. Again, a half opportunity, but it's one of them that's neither here nor there. I don't think we've got to do much with it.
Yeah, second half was kind of almost the same. However, there was a few more incidents that kind of overshadowed the game slightly. We'll talk about the goal then that won it from the penalty. The decision was given for a hold or a pull or a push, whatever you want to say, against Andy McDonald on Morgan Neal, I think it was. It was soft, I thought, shall we say, at the time, and I still think it is now. I've seen it a couple of times since. There's just no way he's getting that bar. The bar actually bounces on the edge or just outside the 18-yard line and goes out for a throw-in. I just kind of see how he's given that as a penalty.
If the referee generally thinks that's a penalty, and I will note that the referee was he officiates Premier League games as well.
Used to, and I think we'll come on to that.
I can maybe see the reason why he did, isn't it? However, very contentious, and I think if you're given a penalty for that, then you're given penalties every corner. And I'll go back a couple of years ago, this rule about referees becoming more strict on pulling and that in the box. I seem to remember it was at McDermott Park, St Johnson. I want to say it was they were playing Dundee, but I could be wrong. Bobby Madden gave three penalties in the first half for the same sort of thing. And then that was it. Mm-hmm. He stopped giving penalties for jostling and pushing in the box because he realised, wait a minute, we're giving penalties at every corner.
Yeah.
Again, one of them situations, nobody for Peter Heade initially complained because they were sort of stunned he'd actually given a penalty. And I think it really ended for Cove. We're appealing more. Neil sort of half appealed, yeah, as you do in the box. But as you said, the ball bounced in the 18-yard line and then went out for a throw-in. If that's a penalty, then I'm concerned about future games.
Yeah. There was, I think you said it on commentary as well, that you thought maybe the incident 30 seconds earlier,
yeah,
the handball that wasn't given. Again, having seen that one, I actually think it comes off his back. He does have his arms wide, because I think he's misjudged his bounce, his jump, and it's the header's come off his back. So to give that one would have been extremely soft. But you asked the question: is it all playing on his mind, and that's why he's given that one?
Yeah.
If that's the case, then that's not the best officiating, is it?
No, referees. They always claim that they don't know, they take every incident based on its own merit.
Yeah.
But questionable, because I think he must have some sort of doubts over not giving the first team, because there was three or four Cove players, you know, their hands were up and appealing for it, and then that corner comes in. For he's nowhere near the ball, it's your typical corner jostling. I think it's playing his mind. I guess if you were asked the referee, he would say no, it's on its own merit and it was a penalty for whatever reason. But me personally, as I said in commentary, I think it was playing his mind. I generally think it was, to be honest.
If you're going to be really sort of scrutinise it and look at it and try and play devil's advocate slightly, if you say, well, if he's got his hands on him, you're giving the referee a decision to make. Mm-hmm. Yes, he has his hands on him, but it's one of those where the both sort of have their hands on each other because they're trying to get that extra half yard to try and sprint to the bar, because if they just think, oh, the bar's going to go there, I need to be first at it. And that's just a natural kind of thing you do. You want to try and block off the guy beside you. So even if you're trying to throw that argument towards it to try and justify why it was given, I think it's a weak argument.
My counter argument would be it's a contact sport.
Yes.
You're going to hate jostling at a box, you're not going to stand there and leave a gap between your man that you're marking. It's a bit like when you jump for a header and, you know, there's elbows going up, you've got to get some sort of leverage. There's going to be jostling at a corner. Again, if the referee generally thinks that's a penalty, then I would like to see the next couple of games he's going to officiate, because I guarantee you there'll be, every corner will have a worse, a greater appeal for a penalty than what there was on Saturday.
Yeah. You mentioned elbows, which will go into our next sort of talking point. Scott Ross, first half, was given a foul against for, I guess, maybe a use of an arm, a use of an elbow. Yeah. Didn't receive a yellow card for it. Second half, Russell McLean does the same thing. He gets a yellow. However, Scott Ross gets some attention. And again, I think we said in commentary that maybe the fact that Russell had gotten up pretty quick when it was against him has maybe played on in the mind of the referee and thought, well, it's not as bad as I initially thought. Let's just have a talking to him and then carry on. But what we'll say is it did lead on to other things. So first of all then, the two with Scott Ross and with Russell McLean, which are your thoughts on them both? Should you treat them the same, or was the referee right in just booking Russell but not Scott?
So the first one with Scott Ross, I think Russell McLean, I said it in commentary, did him a favour. I think, and we didn't want to see it, so I'm not condoning it, but had Russell McLean thrown in a few rolls and clutching the face, I think the referee would have been more inclined to produce a yellow card. The fact that Russell got up pretty quick, thankfully, no serious injury, got on with the game. As you said, the referees probably thought, not as bad as I first thought, and he let him go. I personally think it's a yellow card. He's gone with the elbow or the forearm. It's a dangerous foul. To me, it's a yellow card. Mm-hmm. The Russell McLean one, Scott Ross hadn't been booked for the first one, so I don't think he can book Russell McLean for almost the exact same thing. But then, as you said, Scott Ross went down, needed attention. Mm-hmm. Does it play in the referee's mind? Probably. I think that they're both similar, so if one's a yellow, they're both a yellow. But if he deemed, as he did the first one, not to be a yellow card, I kind of see his understanding for Russell McLean to get a yellow card. So in isolation, they're both the same, but they had different outcomes, and Scott Ross didn't get a booking, but Russell McLean did.
It's for anybody that's listened to our podcast in the last sort of 2 years, we'll know that the word consistency comes up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And in terms of refereeing, that's all we really want is a bit of consistency. So if you're going to let Scott or Ross away with one, surely you then have to let Russell away with one as well. Because I think even for both, I think it was maybe just the first fouls as well.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Rory McAllister, I should say, had about 8 or 9 fouls even in the first half alone, and he'd get away without getting a yellow card again. It just sums up the how the referee was.
I think Jordan said it as well. He said it to us, you know, you're just looking for that consistency from the referee. And as a player, it's frustrating because you see it on the park that one player gets not even a talking to, just a calm down, and then another player gets a yellow card for a very similar incident. So again, the players as well, spectators and whatever, they're obviously looking for consistency. And that's, you can understand if you felt that Scott Ross was not yellow, providing that Russell McLean didn't get a yellow, because they're similar incidents. So as I said, both of them's either a yellow or both of them's not a caution.
Yeah, and that kind of led on to the big decision second half. Scott Ross was, I guess, looking for a little bit of retribution. We all know Scott from his time here. We know his kind of reputation. He likes a red card in his time here. The one where he clearly has jumped into the back of Rusty with his knee high. The ball isn't even head height. I think Rusty's actually going to take it on his chest, and he's going in with his knee quite high. Had he booked him in the first half and then books him for that one, he's obviously going to be sent off. Was it even worthy of a straight red?
I think the definition is it dangerous foul play? And as you said, he's nowhere near the ball. He's got to go through the mat, and coming in at that height as well, to me it's a reckless challenge. It's dangerous. You could seriously injure your opponent, and it's nice sour grapes. I generally feel that, okay, that they're two big lads, they're strong and committed, but I generally think the way he's come through, and I've seen the still image, it doesn't really do justice, because there's a bit of momentum behind it as well. Before he's got his knee up that high, there's got to be momentum to bring you to that height.
Yeah.
And Rusty's seen a clatter. If a referee produced a red card, I think there'd be too much complaints. But the fact that he didn't book him for the incident in the first half meant he just got a caution. But again, you're sort of looking for... Well, I'm criticising the referee for some of his decisions. The linesman on our side, that is, we were looking at the game, he's got a relatively good view as well. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, we're slightly higher, but, you know, you've got to ask our linesman for a bit of assistance. Because he can see it for a side on angle, mm-hmm. whereas the referee's maybe looking at it straight on.
Well, he's actually, because the incident is just inside the Peterhead half, he's obviously going to be at the halfway line, because he's at this, I'm waving my hands here, but he's at the cove half,
yes,
if you like. So he's running the line up there. So he's actually standing on the halfway line, and he'd be looking right at it. And mm-hmm. right enough, he'd see it. And that's why, I think that's why it infuriated Jim and Davey on the bench, because it's virtually the same angle as what that they've got.
Yeah.
And he, as you said, he should have been looking at it and going, okay, yeah, I'm 30 yards away from it, but that looked high, it looked dangerous.
Yeah, I do. But we're going on about consistency. You wouldn't. I don't mind the game stopping for a minute or two if the referee needs to speak to both linesmen to get their opinion, if they come to the right decision. And the referee maybe feels he made the right decision by just being a caution, but I certainly think with the force it came in and the nature of the challenge, worthy of a red card, in my opinion.
Is it a case then maybe that because the referee has been refereeing Premier League games in the last three or four years, doesn't know the reputation, shall we say, of Scott Ross and his previous incident, shall we say, in the last for a few years when he was at Peterhead and things like that. So is it a case that we kind of knew that there was going to be a little bit of retribution, so did he not expect that to be coming?
I don't think the reputation of a player should make much difference just based on that challenge alone, whether it be a Premier League player playing for Rangers, Celtic, Hibs, Hearts, Aberdeen, or whether it's a player playing for Peterhead, Cove, Falkirk. To me, that sort of challenge is a red card, regardless of your reputation and what level you're at. And as we said, there is maybe a reason why a former Premier League referee is refereeing a game in League One. And he maybe needs more support for the powers above, and to get referees up to this level, and you can't just leave them out to dry, hung out to dry, so to speak. They need help. And I'm not being funny, but if you look at that incident and you didn't deem that a dangerous foul play, I am concerned that the referee would deem as serious foul play.
Yeah, the fact that he's given that as a yellow card and a yellow card only, and then he's given the penalty as a holding, that they're massively different decisions, and they're huge decisions in the context of the game as well.
Yeah, I think if Scott Ross been booting the first half for a challenge on Rusty, and then that one, you know, at that point it's 0-0, and it could be a completely different game. The mentality of the sides change. I think on that instance, Cove got away with one.
Well, yeah, you would think that if had they gone, if Scott Ross had gotten sent off, you would have thought that at least one of the forwards would have come off, or certainly one of them would have dropped into midfield or some kind of. I know Cove had quite a small bench anyway, so their options would have been limited, but you would have been taking that front two out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it changes the game slightly. On the flip side then, we're talking about red cards or potential red cards. Andy McCarthy, should he have seen more than a yellow?
In my opinion, yes. I think Jordan disagreed on Saturday. He thought it was a yellow. I think personally, he came exactly fit his day, and it is slightly high. Cove got away with one. I think we got away with one. Had the referee produced a red card, I don't think there can be too many complaints. It wasn't that far away from the side. I had a good view. Genuinely, if the ref produced a red, I wouldn't have been arguing with it.
I think, as you said, he came to what he's doing, but what he's trying to do is just try and take the player down.
Yeah.
What I think he's done is he's mistimed it, and if I'm right in thinking, is he actually catches him in the back of the back of the calf,
yeah,
rather than just taking his tipping his foot. So I understand what he was trying to do, but his execution of it was poor. But as I said during the game as well, even in that position there's no need to do it.
No,
he was so deep in his own half that, you know, he still had another 60, 70 yards to go.
Yeah, I think
if that was inside Peterhead's half, slightly different. Yes, just take him out of the game. But that's Andy's game, isn't it? It's just he's that aggressive, that foolhardy. But I appreciate that he probably, if it had been a red card, I don't think Henry could have argued about it.
No, I think you said it in commentary on Saturday. You asked the question, did he really need to make that challenge? And yeah, I can see what Andy's trying to do. He's trying to break up play. He doesn't want them to counter. But to me, he has got it wrong. He has mistimed it. And as I said, if the referee produced a red card, I don't think there can be too much complaints about it. As you said, I know what he's trying to do, but the timing of it was just off. And that split second, if a red card produced, wouldn't have argued.
So the overall then, we've lost the game, and we'll hear from Jim in a few minutes, but I think he said earlier on as well that he was pleased with the way that we competed against them, and for large parts of the game it was fairly even. So yeah, again, because even though it's a defeat, there is progress there. It's not an absolute thumping as what we might have expected, say, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I think even though it's a defeat, there's more positives to take out of this than I think we've had in recent weeks. I think it's easy to be downbeat when you've lost, but I think the manner of the defeat and the way we played in periods of the game on Saturday, there is a bit of no confidence, but there's belief. I think the players realise that you'd have become a bad group of players overnight. I mean, we have seen that we've put in good performances in periods of games. We're just maybe Ken Alloa was a good performance throughout 90 minutes. East Fife, the first half was the best that Jim's seen in years. Granted, we got beat 3-0, but there is a lot of positives to take, and I certainly think that the game on Saturday, whilst a defeat, but there's positives that you can take out going into the next game against Queen's Park.
I think as well that some of the players, and somebody like Naya Payne, for example, is a confidence player. I think it's a phrase that's used quite a lot, but I think he's the kind of guy that he needs to be almost in a winning team, or it needs to be playing well for his confidence to build up. And I know he's been carrying a rock for the last couple of weeks. That Saturday was his first start for about two or three games. But again, if he looked at one in the first half where he smashes it with his left foot, if he catches that right and goes in, suddenly his performance, yeah. his confidence rises, and his performance goes up as well. I'm not saying that he's not particularly playing badly, but he just seems to have been a little bit quieter in the last few games as well, which coincides with the fact that we've lost a few games as well.
Yeah, there's been a few players like Artnages and Naya that they're confidence players, and when they're in amongst the goals or they're playing well, we've seen that when Naya and Rusty linked up for the game a couple of weeks ago, one scores, one assists, and vice versa, and they looked confident. You've seen that with their play in the last half hour of that game. Naya's chasing everything down, Russell McLean's putting himself about, but is your goals then are coming, is the defeats that come in, you get that, your mentality changes, and it's difficult to get you at that mentality when you're losing games, but hopefully that they'll realise that obviously there was a Clyde performance, wasn't it? Wonderful, we got the result, but there was a decent performance against Cova. I know we got beat, but I certainly think there's a positive there, but they've got to use that going into the next couple of games.
Yeah, and the amount of penalties as well that we're conceding is obviously a concern. It's five in the last five league games, I think it is. If you're going to concede a penalty, whether or not they are penalties or whether they're not penalties, if you're going to concede them, you have to then score a minimum two a game to even win a game.
And it makes it difficult because we're near, barring the three against Clyde, we're near a team that predominantly score many goals. It is tight affairs. Normally you're 1-0, 2-1, whatever. But as you said, if we're going to concede penalties, you know, for the word go to win the game, you've got to score two. And it's difficult, but hopefully they're looking at why we're conceding the penalties and trying to eradicate that. Otherwise, we're in for a long season of 36 penalties.
Yeah. So let's now hear from manager Jim Marcanelli, get his thoughts after the game.
Well, do we start with that one then? Hugely controversial decision for the penalty. What's your thoughts on it?
I just think it's still on his mind for the last corner. And the one that hits the hand before, it's hit his hand at point blank range, which the linesman said isn't a penalty. And Cove accepted. The referee obviously still had it in his mind, decided that, you know, he was going to give it. Because it's not a penalty. I mean, if that's a penalty, there's a penalty at every game.
Yeah. But he didn't hit it the best of games. He seemed to be quite. You see them pick up the little things it didn't make for a
game. Look at the stats. They committed 25 fouls, we committed 19. Mm-hmm. I think Rory McAllister committed 8 fouls, possibly 9. There used to be a thing called a persistent foul. Mm-hmm. We were really unhappy with Scott Ross' challenge. We felt it was a red card. Mm-hmm. Because knowing Scott, it was obviously retribution,
yeah,
for what happened before, and we knew it was coming. He didn't book Scott Ross in the first half for an elbow in the head, and then he booked Russell
for the same thing.
So I think his performance, as I said, he probably just refereed the game as best he could.
Yeah, he did produce a red card to you.
That's fine. I mean, at the end of the day, I just said what I thought. You know, at the end of the day, you're not allowed to. I thought he cheated us. So, I mean, I think when you can see him, I lost the penalty again for last week. Apparently, we can see it's another penalty. Mm-hmm. And when it happens to you, you can just, you know, a long time I've said it to the referee, but I said it nicely to the linesman. And I don't regret it.
Yeah. In terms of the referee, or getting away from the referee, how did you assess your team's performance overall?
I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. I think they're a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we went
toe-to-toe
with them.
Yeah.
And I took a lot of that. I thought we had a nice shape to the table, defensively quite solid against two good players. And, you know, I'm just disappointed. For me, it's a 0-0 all day long.
Yeah.
But for the referee's decision, you know, it would have been.
So you had a draw, a fair result,
I think so. I think so. And again, you know, looking at the stats, we had their possession in the game, which very rarely happens, over a team that always need the ball. And, you know, I thought we did go toe to toe with them, and I take a lot of the game there.
Which is just maybe that final bit, the bit in the final third, just kind of lacked maybe a bit.
I thought both teams were the same.
Yeah.
You know, the final third was a bit that let us down. Because I thought we get in the great areas, especially in the right hand side, mm-hmm. inside right area, and we just never get the final ball in. And as I said, the one that Hamish does go in, and the goalkeeper saves, the linesman gives a goal kick.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just like what they're watching.
Yeah.
So, but no, it was. I thought it was okay. I thought we could do better in the final third, but you know, I'm pleased. I think we'll be okay. If you know what I mean?
Yeah. A word on your new signing, Flynn, came in the other day. Threw him in for the start. How do you assess his performance?
He's done really well. I mean, I don't know. Flynn, when's the last time you played? You know, it says a lot for him. Didn't have any problems with him, even though it's a wee bit of a false position for him.
Yeah.
He went to the game 5A, and you know, 5A was nearly to the 4 in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it's him and Ryan Conroy spun quite well in alternating positions, and it gave Ryan a wee bit of stability at left back, you know, because Flynn was on there, you know, especially if he was pushing forward, he was sitting. And I think that helped us. I think that's why we looked to be a bit more secure.
Yeah, and you've now got, apart from Gary Fraser, a full squad to pick from, and it's good quality you've got as well. It gives you a bit of a problem for selection.
Aye, I mean, that's good. You know, I mean, that's what you want. We want. So, you know, we just got me. As I say, I'm gutted for the boys, and that's why, you know, I've got to defend them with referee the day, because it continuously happens, and they can't really fight their corner, but I'll fight their corner for them.
Yeah. If it'd been a world class goal, it's just been a difference. Then you could put your hand on and say that they deserved it, but at the end of the day, it's a referee decision that's cost us again. But again, it's another penalty that you've conceded.
Aye.
It seems to be a hallmark this season.
I think it's about 7.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the exact number, but it's something ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But these last two are particularly soft, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I said to the linesman what I said about the referee. For me, he's cheated us. And he's got to be looking to give that, otherwise, he don't give.
Yeah.
They weren't looking for it.
No.
Jim's in there, and quite categorically saying referee has cheated us. Strong words, strong language, but you can see where he's coming from.
I think it shows you the magnitude of how aggrieved Jim felt, and as he said in his interview, he told the linesman that, and that's why he got sent off himself, to be honest. Referee didn't take too kindly to it, but shows you how strong the manager felt that decision was badly awarded to Cove, that he felt that's the language that he needed to use. Because it's not like Jim, we've seen him frustrated in the dugout before, but never nothing like that. Kenny doesn't normally shout and scream, but the choice of word, I think, was key as well. And as he said, he felt, to quote Jim, he felt cheated. I think a lot of Peterhead folk felt like that on Saturday night.
Yeah, and as he said as well, and as you said in the audio there as well, I think if it had been a 0-0, we walked away with a 0-0, I think everybody would have taken that, and probably, if anybody felt that either team had edged it, probably would have been probably what am I trying to say? I've got an idea.
Clutching at straws.
Clutching at straws. Aye. Because really, there wasn't much in it. 0-0 probably would have been the right result.
Aye, as we said, there wasn't much chances in the game. You can sort of write off the first half, second half, few and far between again. And I think 0-0 would have been a fair result given the way the game went. So again, Cove count itself fortunate with the win and some of the decisions. I know we've touched on the Andy McCarthy situation that we got off with, but I think if it had finished 0-0, a draw wouldn't have been the worst result. And given the form that we've been on, 4 points from Clyde and Cove, we'd have probably settled for that as well.
Yeah,
I'd have thought
against a team that most would think is going to be a top end challenging for the title, but coming off the back with a defeat against Clyde, you would have thought it would have been there. But again, yeah, I think a draw would have been sufficient, and I think everybody would have been walked away quite happy with it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the performance on Saturday wasn't bad either. We weren't the fussed about the performance against Clyde, but I think the performance on Saturday, you know, it did merit something out of the game.
Right, so we, as promised, we're going to hear now from new signing Flynn Duffy after the game.
Hi Flynn, congratulations on your first game. How did you think it went?
I thought it went very well. We're gutted we didn't get at least the draw there. Thought the boys stayed very compact. You know, I thought we were hard to beat, and Cove have got good players and managed them reasonably well. We're gutted to not go away with at least the draw.
It's not your natural position you were playing today, but again, it just gives you that bit more experience as well, though.
Yeah, I'm a player who's comfortable playing in a few positions and second midfield as well. Don't play there often, but you know, whenever the gaffer wants me to play there, I'll go and do my best. And that's what I tried to do today.
It was quite a competitive game, particularly the second half. Is that a game that you'd like to get involved in?
Yeah, I like football's competitive sport. I like being competitive, getting tight to people. You know, I like doing that just as much as getting on the ball. I enjoy defending, I enjoy going forward. It didn't bother me. I was scrappy. It just rose to the challenge.
And when did you kind of know about the kind of possibility of coming to Peterhead?
I thought about it last week, and as soon as I trained on Tuesday, as soon as I knew they were interested, I was keen to join the club and get game time here, because it's a great club.
Yeah.
Great club with good players, great players, good people as well, and it's a club that wants to do well in this league, so I thought.
Did you get any feedback for Kieran Freeman before you came
out? Yeah, I spoke to Kieran, and he spoke very highly of the club, said the boys are great, and he was great. He was a great.
So you're obviously here for game time as well, obviously to help your development. What kind of player are you? What kind of player should we expect to see?
I'm naturally a left back, tenacious, aggressive left back, who likes to get forward, put crosses in, but can also go in midfield and do the same, be aggressive, get on the ball. I like to do battles, and I like to be competitive.
Yeah, we saw you kind of more of a kind of holding midfield role today alongside Simon Ferry. How did you find that playing with somebody like Simon, who's got a vast amount of experience?
Oh, it was great. He helped me through it all the time. He was speaking to me loads. I tried to speak to him. I felt very comfortable with him. I thought it was secure. Him, and Scott Brown as the three. I thought we were quite defensively solid. And going forward, I think we had good chances as well, which on another day we put in play.
Your opinion on the penalty then? It seemed soft from our point of view.
Yeah, it looked very soft from my point of view as well. But if he has his hands on him, that's giving the referee a decision to make. But personally, I thought the ball was going out of play, so penalty shouldn't be stood. But the ref made the decision that he needs to get on that.
Yeah, he didn't really have the best of games. The referee overall, possibly maybe should have sent off Scott Ross as well. Do you think?
Scott Ross. I mean, he jumped up and kneed him in the back, and I thought that was dangerous play, but again, the referee's made the decision, can't dwell on that, just get the ball there and try and play again.
Okay, well, all the best.
So how did you assess Flynn's performance then on Saturday?
Really good. I said that on the commentary. I thought, considering he's going to play for a wee while as well, short notice in coming up, isn't really playing with the guys either. I thought he gave a really good performance. As I said right at the start, he's got that defensive sort of mind. He slotted in when Ryan Conroy went forward. I think he'll be a really good addition. He also said that he spoke to Kieran Freeman before he came down. We've all seen how well Kieran Freeman's done. He's now in the United squad as well. And I think it benefits both parties. Flynn Duffy will get the game time, and obviously he'll learn as he goes with Peter Heed, and that can only be a good thing. Overall, yeah, really good performance for the 80 odd minutes that he was in the park.
Yeah, and he said as well that he can play in a few different positions as well, naturally a left back. So that maybe just it'll help Ryan Conroy as well, because as we said previous weeks, although he's not an actual left back, he has been doing particularly well, but there has been times where you just think, right, it's maybe a game that we need to bring him out of the team altogether, or even just in the last maybe sort of 15-20 minutes, just take him off because he's struggling a little bit. We've now got that option as a natural left back, whereas, you know, the game that he did miss doing the East Fife, we were playing Andy McDonald, purely maybe because he is a left footer more than anything else. So again, it's given Jim that options, but it's not just a case of, well, just filling the squad up with numbers. It's people who can actually play as well.
I think also gives us that luxury. We can play Flynn Duffy at left back and Ryan Conroy in left midfield. Again, it's a different option, a natural left footed player on there, because I think 9 times out of 10 it's either Naya Payne that's coming in off the right hand side, or, you know, Lyle Cameron, Hamish Ritchie, these guys that are doing it. So if you've got a natural left footer and you can hit Flynn Duffy overlapping or vice versa, I think it gives us that width that we've maybe needed in certain games as well when teams come up to Balmore. So yeah, a good addition, and I think him and Conroy will link up well as the season goes on.
Yeah, and a nice guy as well. We spoke to him there, but after we stopped recording as well, he stayed and had a chat with us as well, which was nice. Which is slightly unusual, because normally it's a case of, right, let's get the media stuff and out the door as quick as I can. But so that might change in years to come. But no, he was a really nice guy, and when you, a bit like Naya Payne, because they take the time to speak to you, you want them to do well after that as well.
He's he appears to be a likable guy.
Yeah.
He seems down to earth, and I think he said, listen, he just wants to play football. You know, and I'm a fan of these guys coming to lower league clubs, because it'd be quite easy to pick up a wage and sitting on the bench at Dundee United or, you know, wherever they may be, and getting bigger wages than we could offer. But they're willing to come and play their football. And, you know, as was mentioned a minute ago or two, Kieran Freeman came, he did really well and went back. Lyle Cameron's benefited, okay, he's maybe struggled a wee bit this season. Josh Mulligan's getting the advantage of it just now with regular first team football. So hopefully they see PAE as a club that they can come and develop, and I think Flynn will do really well for us this season.
Yeah, Kieran's did well in the Dundee Derby the other weekend as well, so much so that he was getting quite a lot of praise on social media as well. So it does show you that sometimes that you have to take this drop down the divisions and you know, take your medicine and see it as a good way of developing, rather than, as you said, just sitting and hoping to get your chance in the first team. Whereas if you go and come to Peterhead or come to a League 1 team or League 2 team and play well, you will get noticed, and then you get back to your parent club and you can do well.
I'd like to think player C is maybe one step backwards, but to go two steps forward.
Yes.
You know, a season in lower league football can benefit them as a player. And it seems to be a good setup with the Dundee clubs, where it benefits them, it benefits Peterhead, and it benefits the player. And ultimately, the player progressing is the most important thing, and we've seen that in recent years with a few players that's come on loan.
Yeah, so we hope he does well. We wish him well, as we do with all the players. But as I said, we hope he's going to adapt well and give something to the squad. So on to this coming Saturday's game then, Queen's Park away from home, league leaders, a team that a lot of people fancied to be up there. Mainly because of the money that they've got, the backing that they've got, and it's kind of things are going on. They are top, but maybe not as far in front as maybe people might have anticipated. I think they'll think it's a tighter league than a lot of people are expecting. But what are you expecting for Saturday then?
It's going to be a really tough game. As you said, Queen's Park are top. They maybe think they could have done better in some games this season. I think they've set the heather alight. And as we've said numerous times, anybody can beat anybody in this division. We're in for a tough game, but as we've said it so many times over the last couple of years, we cannot concede early goals. And, you know, the players have got to be switched on for the word go. And to me, it's playing it in sort of like sections, get through the first 10 minutes, then get through the next 10 and try and build your way into the game. Don't know what to see as being too defensive and just inviting pressure. So it's difficult getting that balance, but we're in for a tough afternoon. And probably a game where I don't think we're going to see much of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I think concentration and just keeping, you know, being smart with your play and they pressing too high and getting tired. But yeah, it's going to be a tough afternoon for the guys.
I have to say, I'm genuinely worried about this game and how bad the score could be. However, again, clutching at straws a little bit. If you hark back to a game a couple of seasons ago against Park Thistle, when we went to Firhill and we were expecting to be hammered, we ended up actually winning that game and winning it quite comfortably in the end. So they've got that in the locker, but we need to, much like what Jim says about Clyde, if you can keep David Goodwillie quiet, I think if we can keep somebody like Simon Murray quiet, that'll go a long way to determine how the game goes.
It's one of them games I'm hoping that Queen's Park sort of underestimate us. I'm hoping that they're maybe going to look at the table and go, yeah, they've had a poor season, they've got one win in five or six, whatever it is now, in the league throughout the cup, that they're struggling a bit, and I'm hoping they sort of take us a wee bit lightly and might play into our hands. Nathan Thistle did that the other season when we went down, but again, we got a positive result. We have shown it in the past. We've been doing it to Dundee United, doing it to Tannadice, opening game last season, and done well. So we do hate in our locker to put in a surprise result, but as I said, it's going to be a tough afternoon. Bart's against the wall, and I think it's Nate conceding early, and I think that's the crucial thing, because I think if we concede early, Queen's Park get the feel for the game and they can grow into it. I'm hoping we can sort of stifle them and then work our way into the game.
I think it's the longer the game goes, the more it will turn in our favour slightly. Getting away a game without conceding a penalty would be a good start, because as we said, if you're going to concede a penalty, then you have to kind of get at least one to get yourself back into it. So it's important that we didn't give the referee a decision again.
Do we know who the referee is on Saturday?
Not off the top of my head, no.
I'm hoping it's not Gavin Duncan.
he might be Dean Highland.
with respect to him. Nathan seeing a penalty, first of all, is muscle important, as you said earlier. Within Nate, he scored two. And I don't think likes of Queen's Park need any advantage like that. It's keeping it tight for as long as possible and feeling we're way in the game, but I do hate concerns if we open up or concede too early, then we could be facing a very difficult afternoon.
Yeah, does he bring Jason Brown back into the team then, or does he keep it as it was and have the back four same again?
That's a tricky one. I don't think the guys did too much wrong on Saturday, and therefore they didn't do much wrong against Clyde either, but arguably say that Jason is maybe one of our best players, especially at centre-back. I think he's probably one of the better players. So, yeah, calls for him to come in. Again, we've got Mulligan, McDonald and Brown. I think any of that three is a pairing for two of them starting the centre-half. I wouldn't have any arguments with.
Yeah, it's just one of those kind of calls that Jim's going to make, and at the end of the game it will determine whether it was right or wrong, but for me, I think Jason's experience might just be needed, especially for an away game, something like that. Just bring him back in, even playing him at right back might just give him that a little bit extra solidity.
Could he maybe play Mulligan at right back?
He could play Mulligan. Kevin
McCarthy's
right back,
played there, but again, you're looking for natural players, especially in a game like that. And as you said, Simon Murray, the experience that he's got, Brown could maybe pair up.
Yeah, I just think bringing Jason in for this game, there's more positives for him to play than not to play, if you see what I mean.
Yeah,
and I think if you're gonna bring him in, obviously somebody's gonna have to miss out slightly. Whether that might be Flynn, we just praised him just 2 minutes ago how well he was. But it's probably been a game where I think it just screams that Jason has to play.
Yeah, I think the experience he's got, and that's no disrespect to Mulligan or McDonald, they've played a few times together, but as you said, Jason Brown's experience might just gain the nod. And against experienced players like Simon Murray, we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago against Clyde, we thought Jason Brown and Goodwill would be a good match. Obviously things happened, Jason didn't play, and it was Mulligan and McDonald who did really well, but the experience, as you said, of Jason Brown might be a key factor in the game on Saturday.
It would just be next to, as I say here, no incidents, just get through the game, and come away with a 0-0 would be fantastic. It's not going to go like that, I know, but it would be nice to just kind of say, right, up to the nine for us to speak about next week.
It would be nice, contentious free game as well, but I think if we get anything from the game on Saturday, it'd be a bonus.
Yeah, anything more than a draw, I think, would be sort of a bonus, but a point from there would be great. As I said, even if it's a 0-0, I think we would take it.
Yeah, there are certain games in the season you look at for trying to pick up points, and I think when the season started, you look at Queen's Park away and think that's a game that you would get a win from. That's not being defeatist, it's just the reality. As you said, the Queen's Park have got a big financial backing. They've got some really good experienced players in their team as well, and they'll be difficult to break down.
Yeah, so we'll try and be a bit more positive again next week when we come back. But that is it for this week for us then. I do hope you've enjoyed it again. As always, my thanks go to Martin for joining me. We'll be back again next week. So until then, on behalf of Martin Smith and myself, Colin Byers, thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll see you all again very soon. Cheers.